Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
Hey everyone, welcome to A Good Football Show. I am Matt Straub, and with the release of the NFL schedule on Wednesday night, today we are taking a way too early look at the matchups in week one of the 2021 NFL season. We have loosely ranked these matchups from 1 to 16 based on fantasy potential, intrigue, and possibly some personal biases, looking at spots to potentially take advantage of and, of course, some to avoid. I'm joined by John Daigle, Pat Doherty, and Denny Carter. Guys, I gotta start with a dilemma here. My long-running hometown fantasy football league will sometimes use the Kentucky Derby as the draft lottery. So basically, everyone is randomly assigned a horse out of a hat, and your top finishing horse, order of horse finish, will determine the draft order. And you can probably see where this is going. As you know, a controversy has ripped through the horse racing world, and more importantly, my fantasy league. So the question for you guys is, I put it to the panel, what happens to the draft order if Medina Spirit is officially disqualified? Do you vacate it, or is it in? The results are in, and you stick with that. And there are gambling implications here, too, for anyone who bet on that race.
You got to do sportsbook rules. I mean, it's all tickets already cashed. You're not giving it back.
Exactly.
Good luck collecting that. So I would say it is as it stands.
Do you know a good attorney? I mean, I personally would initiate legal action against Bob Baffert. And it's probably what I would do if I were in your position. You have time and money to waste on that, I hope.
We're talking about the canceled horse. Is that
that's how you know him?
The canceled horse won a guy in my hometown fantasy league the first overall pick in the in the draft.
I agree, right, John. I mean, like, the race happened. I mean, the legalities afterwards, you know, whatever. You guys agreed. You understood that whatever horsey goes first, even if he's pumped up full of acne medicine, that's the draft position, and you just got to live with it.
Yeah, I think that's the ruling.
Otherwise, you just have to go do like a Zed digital horse race and call your 12 gates.
Bleak.
That's disgust on Denny's face, by the way. He's not having that. He'd much rather just get the canceled horse a shot.
I'm canceling the digital horses.
Okay. It's been decided. This was pretty clear. I was hoping for a little more ambiguity.
Sorry. And I before we move on to the real show, though, I have to say something about Denny, who is back from his panic hoarding of gasoline and is so frazzled and rattled that he was eating a cup of noodles before the show started.
That's right.
I just want to make sure Denny's like in the right frame of mind to do a show.
I'm not, but I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to trudge through. Yeah, all the gas stations in my area are sold out of gas today. There's no gas to be had.
There was a pack drop today at the gas station?
There was a pack, yes. When packs. And they
on eBay,
people lost their mind yesterday. it's a completely man-made shortage. It's not actually a shortage. It's that the irrational consumer has taken over.
Try being a nomad at this time. That's probably not a good idea, by the way, to just be driving around the country.
Yeah,
I showed up at my gas station this week. I tried to give them 2 Bitcoin. I think that's probably like worth like $100. And they wouldn't take it, and I still have no gas.
Boy, we are outdating ourselves and showing what we know in life.
Mean, I paid $100,000 for 2 gallons of gas. I know how much Bitcoin is worth, actually, or
was worth.
Before a certain someone tweeted something. Anyways.
No politics.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, as we said, after the release of the NFL schedule, we're going to get into our game-by-game look at week one, rank these games from 16 to 1. We're going to start at 16, and before we get started, since this was your brainchild, Daigle, anything you want to mention, big picture that I've left out of this premise?
It's the spoiler cast. We're just going to ruin week one scores for everyone while talking about fantasy and betting along the way. That's it. There are no rules.
Yeah.
The Broncos and the Giants have the lowest over-under at week one that I've seen, 42.5. And if I'm really giving myself a gut check, this is absolutely the last game I'd be turning on. And I think that's saying something considering that Texans Jaguars is on the slate, but we will get to that. First, Denny, you get the honors for number 16. Can you talk yourself into some excitement about Drew Lock or Teddy Bridgewater versus Daniel Jones? God bless you if you can.
I can't, but I can talk myself into Aaron Rodgers in, you know, heading up the Denver offense in that game. No, I mean, if it's Lock versus Daniel Jones in that game, it's ugly. It's a bad matchup for everybody, pretty much. I guess you roll with one of the defenses as a streaming defense. Maybe that's the best I can come up with.
Can we talk about Drew Lock getting points in your stadium? I mean, to me, this is like the most ominous development I've ever seen for a franchise. Drew Lock is getting points in your state week one. That is a huge, huge problem.
It actually is a good opportunity, by the way, for the Broncos defense, oddly enough. The same method that we've used the past 2 years, because as we know, defenses don't matter, and we don't know as much as we think we do. So trying to forecast defenses matters even less. And 2019, the Patriots had the league's easiest schedule, in particular through the first 9 games. We saw what happened. They finished as the fantasy's number one defense. Last year, the Colts had the easiest schedule. We saw what happened. The Colts finished as fantasy's number one defense. I'm not saying the Broncos are going to finish as number one. The 49ers actually have the easiest schedule based on Vegas season win totals, but the Broncos, like the Niners, are not being treated as the number one overall defense or even a top five unit. The Broncos have the second easiest schedule, and they're being drafted right now as the defense 14 overall. So it's tremendous value in a tremendous spot. And so that's where I'm looking for fantasy, always coming away in these deep leagues that for some reason you have to add defenses in with the Broncos.
Wasn't expecting actual insight from this one, so that's pretty nice, actually. It was a very good point.
It's the spoiler cast. You can take it whichever direction you want.
I think we're good for week one.
That was hard-hitting. Let's dial back the insight moving forward. The Jaguars and the Texans combined for a 5-27 record last season, and as much as there's intrigue around the arrival of Urban Meyer, Trevor Lawrence, etc., and probably a good opportunity, great opportunity for them to get off to a good start. Objectively, anything involving the Texans is awful. Game you kind of feel gross watching if you're not a Jaguars or Texans fan, I think. Daigle, when it comes to the Texans, I have to throw this to you. What are your thoughts on this game?
Imagine the utter shock to season ticket holders when the Jimmy Garoppolo-led Texans lose by 3 scores and Trevor Lawrence's debut on the road. That's pretty much all I have for this one. The Texans have 2 chances to win all year. It is this game, and it is week 15 when they see the Jags again.
This has to be the first time in NFL history that a team that had the number one overall pick was not only the favorite in week one, but the favorite on the road. Mm-hmm. So you were Houston Texans, and you were facing the team that just was the worst team in the NFL last year, And they are, again, getting points against you at home, and that you need to reevaluate your life. And yes. John's, yeah, I mean, it feels a little do you think the Texans should be the favorite in this game? I mean, this feels a little presumptuous for me.
How can you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a good point.
How can you favor them? I think you pencil in the Jags with a resounding victory. The Urban Meyer era is off to a hot
that's
start.
True.
You know, and he knows. Yeah, he knows exactly what he's doing. You know, four touchdowns for Trevor Lawrence. It all comes together.
Travis Etienne breaks a long one.
Yeah, exactly.
No, Carlos Hyde. Carlos Hyde does.
Looks good. Yeah, right. Even Hyde gets some garbage time action in this one, folks. You know, watch out. But really, I mean, I am going to offer some insight. I'm sorry, Matt. I would say that we're going to have to be ahead of the game in streaming defenses against the Texans because we are not the only ones who know that Houston is going to suck. You know, so we're going to have to plan ahead 2-3 weeks sometimes, depending on the savvy level of your league. We're going to have to get those defenses. So I can see myself drafting a lot of Jacksonville defense in just for week one purposes.
And not just in like round 16, by the way. I mean, Denny's talking like round 10 or 11. He's going to be taking the Jaguars defense for one week.
I'm hammering them in the sixth in every league.
That is a tremendous point, especially if you're just going to stream defenses all year, because no one's going to take the Jags for obvious reasons, and they'll be available in the very last round. So you just grab them, you have your week one starter, and then you dump them the following week. That's too much insight for this podcast, Denny.
I'm sorry.
Niners at the Lions features San Fran as a 7.5-point road favorite, the most lopsided spread of week one right now. And just some behind the scenes for everyone listening or watching, I initially had this game a few spots higher, and Pat successfully lobbied to have it moved down on the list. So how ugly, Pat, are you expecting things to be in this one, especially on the Detroit side of the ball?
Well, I mean, two teams breaking in. Well, you know, the 49ers breaking in a new quarterback, the Lions kind of breaking in a new everything. And this game, so two teams that we don't really know what to expect from anymore. And so it kind of like brings the game down to schemes. And that would be Kyle Shanahan's scheme versus the knee biter's scheme, whatever he has worked up over the offseason. And you know, even against the Lions, like 7.5 points on the road feels kind of hefty for me, for a team who will probably be starting a quarterback who his only game in the past 2 years was against Central Arkansas. But like the scheme difference to me, that probably is worth 7.5 points. And I don't place bets. I'm not a bettor. I do feel comfortable in the 7.5 does not feel too hefty to me for the 49ers in week one.
It won't be an upset alert because I don't think the Lions have a chance of winning, but covering at home against potentially a rookie quarterback. Yeah, I could definitely see that. So I agree on the points. And then also I mentioned earlier, 49ers have the league's easiest schedule. It's what they drew this year, which also tells us that futures markets are wide open. The Niners can basically just sleepwalk to the NFC championship and then see what happens against the Bucks, while the AFC, all the top four guys, the Ravens, Chiefs, Bills, perhaps the Chargers, just duke it out all the way through the playoffs. But it seems like the Niners got the utmost luck in scheduling.
Is this game in San Francisco?
It's in Detroit.
Detroit City.
All right, good. Because I think you guys are underselling the knee biters. I think in this game, it's the start of the Dan Campbell era, however short that will be. It's new quarterback. You're at home. You have a crowd for the first time in a year. You have an inexperienced quarterback coming in. You have a probably a top five offensive line if everybody stays healthy. These guys have been disrespected and talked down to for an entire offseason. The Lions are coming out, and they're not just winning this game. They're beating the pants off the Niners. And I say, you know, with all seriousness.
I will say, like, so this is a Dan Campbell's staff is a staff full of like former players, like kind of one of the most like player centric staffs in a really long time. And there probably will be. And we know his one, like so far easily identifiable skill is like motivation and like pumping up his guys. Right. And there will be lots of positive energy coursing through the Lions. So I actually could buy into that narrative.
Sure.
Adrian Peterson off the street, 35 carries, 125 yards in that game, 3 scores. Yes, put it down, Denny.
All the D's.
Yeah. Mark it down. Yeah.
All right, coming in at 13 on our list is the Sam Darnold revenge game, a total of just 43 points in the Panthers and Jets matchup, which makes you think we could be in for a real slog here. Denny, anything to get excited about in this matchup?
I mean, I don't know. I guess the total is so low because of the unknowns on the Jets side. Well, I guess on both sides, since Darnold is new, but I think this is low key going to be a high scoring game. I could see this being like an kind of an ugly back and forth type affair. I think Darnold is in a great spot. Forget the revenge narrative. You know, he's in a great spot with his offensive weapons. When you have Terrace Marshall as your wide receiver three, and wide receiver or you know fourth pass catcher in the pecking order in that offense, I think that's pretty good against a woeful New York secondary. So I could see this being back and forth, low key, high scoring. I'm going to have some. I can see myself having unfortunate DFS exposure to this game.
I mean, two of the least talented defensive teams in the league. Where the Jets, but both teams have good defensive minds in the building, so we'll probably see some improvement for both teams this season. But yeah, I mean, this is the personnel is not there to stop a shootout. Should one be developing in the early portions of the game?
If you want to wait and stream quarterbacks, Darnold is your guy early on. And for the Panthers, it's great because they're going to know what they have in the first month of the season, because they open up against the Jets, against the Saints, at Houston and at Dallas. Four wow. shootouts waiting to happen.
Let's go.
Arguably the league's worst cornerbacks room. And so they're going to have to keep their foot on the gas the entire time. So it's going to be interesting. But yeah, within the first month, we are going to know if the Panthers offense gets carried by Sam Darnold or if he's just a one-year option and gone.
I had trouble deciding where to put the Vikings at the Bengals. Objectively, you could argue this is an awful game between two teams with losing records last year, but also seems like one with a lot of fantasy intrigue. You got Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase reunited, start of Justin Jefferson's encore season, Dalvin Cook potentially running wild on Cincinnati. Thoughts overall for you on this matchup, Daigle?
I honestly think it's a major contender to be a top DFS stat game in week one. The Vikings, as they did with Xavier Rhodes and just passing off players who are past their prime to the Colts last year, took on Patrick Peterson, who last year was not considered a treasure among that secondary. You don't upgrade or consider them an upgrade on defense just because they add this one player who was consistently burned last year. And that's what the Bengals are going to do. I keep using the same stat over and over because it's just so easy to latch onto. Joe Burrow's 10 full starts last year, the Bengals led in pass attempts and dropbacks per game. And they have no choice but to do that again when Chidobe Awuzie is their number one cornerback. So it's going to be an absolute shootout. And if it's not, that just means it is the utmost Dalvin Cook cash game week.
You're ignoring the single most important people. As Danny will say, the mainstream media is not talking about this. Mike Zimmer, he goes 7-9 or 8-8 one season, and then he wins double digit games the following season. The Vikings are going to be good this year. I mean, yeah, they probably will be good, but obviously I do not believe in that. But this is one where I really don't know. This is one of those week one games where I don't know what to expect. So I feel like there's two very huge variables on both sides. One is, will Mike Zimmer kind of have like the troops back in order on his side of the ball? He usually does. He's one of the best like course correcting coaches in the NFL. And then just how Joe Burrow looks coming off a very, very significant knee. And it apparently wasn't just like a normal ACL tear, and kind of like pitchers coming back from Tommy John surgery. A lot of times quarterbacks coming back from ACLs aren't quite the same the first year. Even Tom Brady wasn't. I mean, that was over 10 years ago. But I wouldn't be surprised to see the Bengals' offense kind of not be as high-flying. Maybe they still have no choice with the offensive line. It's still going to be a major question mark. But I could see maybe a more conservative reined in and yet maybe run-heavy offense from the Bengals to begin the year and maybe actually establish Joe Mixon for once in, like, September instead of waiting till late November.
This has a wide range of outcomes, I would say, because if the Vikings get their way, it's a slow game. It's Dalvin Cook season. It's not a game where you would expect Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen to thrive. And obviously that relatedly Kirk Cousins, but if the Bengals can force a back and forth, then it could be amazing for fantasy, because you have a lot of really high powered electric options in both of these offenses. But Burrow's health, all of this hinges on Burrow's health and his availability.
That's why it's pretty astonishing to see Cousins' numbers last year, just 8.2 yards per attempt on heavy volume, because although they wanted to run the ball and did in competitive game script, they really just always had to compete in high scoring affairs. And Kirk Cousins was really good. So any situations again, although I know Kellen Mond is waiting in the wings. Yeah, Cousins and Vikings double stacks are still going to be very lucrative this season.
A couple games in a row we've talked about with some shootout potential. That brings us to the Dolphins and the Patriots, who both made efforts to upgrade their offenses this offseason. That's Jalen Waddle, Will Fuller joining Miami, Hunter Henry, Jonu Smith, Nelson Agholor, and Kendrick Bourne in New England. Is this another game with a kind of sneaky chance for some fireworks, Pat, or are we reaching on this one?
I think, what's the total on this one, John? I know the Patriots are two-point favorites, but this feels like, this might be 46? Too obvious in an opinion.
45.5 on points bet right now.
This feels like an under to me. We're just the Patriots working in the entire new class, either having the dual threat quarterback under center in Cam Newton, or like the rookie quarterback, who I'm assuming, in Mac Jones. They're not going to put much on his plate early. You know, the Dolphins, the most improved defensive team in the league last season. The Patriots might be the most improved defensive team in the league this season, just because like the reinforcements they're getting. The game's not in Miami, which has traditionally been a Patriots early season complaint, like getting sent down to Miami when the 1,000,000,000% humidity. And that might have lowered my expectations, but even more for the scoring. But this feels like an under to me, as the Patriots work in their new skill core. And again, this ascendant Dolphins defense, which I'm assuming versus what I'm assuming will be a much improved Patriots defense.
Anytime the schedule release happens, I look for three things immediately. One, please don't put Giants and Cowboys on opening Sunday night. They did not this year.
Thank you.
Two, please give me the annual Jaguars-Titans Thursday night game. They did not. They robbed us for the second year in a row. Leonard Fournette going into the fourth quarter with -8 rushing yards was just too much to handle to ever see it again. And then also the third one, please don't tell me the Dolphins are playing the Patriots in week 1. I can't take it anymore. So like last year when Ryan Fitzpatrick, like the only egg he laid as the team starter before he was benched over the bye, I'm just not excited about this at all.
It's a gross game.
Gross.
It's a disgusting game, honestly. I'm horrified by the prospect of the Dolphins and Patriots. It's two good defenses. It's probably two bad quarterbacks. You know, I'm sorry, but Tua has to show something before I say he's not mediocre at best. Anyway, I don't care. Waddle, I don't care. This game has, 9-6 written all over it. And,
well, I don't know if it's going to go 30 points under the 45 total. Wow, but Denny, bold prediction.
I am disgusted by this.
The gas hoarder.
And it's not like a fun division game. Like the Browns always have the Ravens numbers and vice versa. Those are always fun games. The Seahawks and the Cardinals and the 49ers. But like this, like Dolphins and Patriots, is just never fun.
Denny, a little lightheaded after his gas run, just throwing out some wild declarations.
I actually got gas all over my hands. It's a long story.
Yeah, wow. Let's don't tell that one on the podcast.
Yeah.
All right, well, you mentioned the Sunday night game, Daigle. It is indeed not Giants-Cowboys. It's Bears and the Rams on NBC week 1. On the one hand, you're excited to see what Sean McVay can do with Matthew Stafford instead of Jared Goff. On the other hand, unless you're Denny, you're really hoping that Andy Dalton doesn't get the early season preferential veteran treatment. Oh. And, you know, we really would love to see Justin Fields under center. Denny, what do you make of this one?
Quickly, Denny, before you start, yeah, I would just like to remind you that this is a company game, so be very careful at how you tread this one.
I'm very aware. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for reminding me, Matt, that I have an Andy Dalton bet this year.
Exactly.
The guy, you know, the guy who could probably possibly play zero snaps in 2021. So this game is a nightmare matchup for Justin Fields if it is his first game. You know, he gets probably the league's best defense, a ferocious pass rush, a lockdown secondary. Jalen Ramsey probably covering Allen Robinson most of the time, if not all the time. We see how that has gone for other elite receivers when they face Ramsey. So, wow. I mean, that is tough. I am excited, however, to see Stafford at the helm of what was once an innovative, explosive, high-scoring Rams offense. And I think we tend to forget how good this offense can be when they have someone in the pocket who can run it successfully. I mean, not even be spectacular, just not be Jared Goff. So I do think that the Rams players in this game have a lot of, you know, fantasy upside.
On one hand, I do want Dalton sacrificed to the Wolves after a career low 6.5 yards per attempt, because it just doesn't seem like the right spot to throw Fields out there. But genuinely, the Bears can't win unless they play Fields. So I'm very torn on it. On the Rams, though, to your point, I agree. Everyone has mentioned a ton of like dark horse MVP candidates. I've heard Baker Mayfield, even though he's not going to have enough volume, so I'm not in on it. Even if the Browns win 13 games, I think like Nick Chubb puts up too many numbers. Dak Prescott, who the offense will be potent, but remember, like, they were going to be defeated, not undefeated. They were going to be defeated if it weren't for an onside kick recovery against the Falcons last year. Like, that team, they just don't know how to build winning teams. That's why they have never made it past the divisional round since 1995. Stop talking like the Cowboys matter. But Matthew Stafford is actually like the dark horse candidate, because this offense is going to clip from day one. The upgrade from Goff to Stafford, you mentioned this on Spaces the other day, didn't you? We were talking about the schedule. It's just so massive. And honestly, like, that's the one kryptonite for the Niners just walking to the NFC Championship, is that the Rams are going to be amazing.
I was fine until you mentioned that onside kick recovery day goal against the Falcons, but I am now going to leave. That was one of my worst memories of the last few years.
Did you have a bet or like DFS on it?
I'm just a Falcons fan. I'm just a miserable, suffering Falcons fan. And speaking of the Falcons, Eagles and Falcons, two new head coaches in this one, making their debuts. In theory, I think there's some things to be excited about here. You've got Jalen Hurts and Devontae Smith attacking a suspect Atlanta secondary. You got Matt Ryan throwing to Calvin Ridley, hopefully Julio Jones, as well as Kyle Pitts. With the ultimate addition by subtraction and going from Dirk Cutter to Arthur Smith calling plays. Then again, I think we have to approach Philly with a dose of skepticism after Nick Sirianni's intro press conference. So what do you make of this one, Daigle?
It's interesting because the Eagles got absolutely screwed in the scheduling. And Warren Sharp noted this. I'll just repeat it here, that they travel to Dallas mid-year for Monday Night Football, return home to host Kansas City on short rest that Sunday, then travel the following week on normal rest to take on the Panthers and turn around to host the Bucks on 3 days rest Thursday, four games in 17 days. And then they have five road games in their next seven contests after the Bucks game. And to think that Jalen Hurts has a one-year debut and that's it, and like, he's been dealt this, thus like, he's probably already out of the picture in 2022, is not fair, but it's true, since the Eagles do have four picks in the first two rounds in 2022.
So I'm going to go back real quick, a stat that no one probably means nothing. Matthew Stafford had 700 yards in two games against the Bears last season. Very instructive, I'm sure, since he's on a new team now.
That's good. It's a good stat.
Falcons, rock, paper, scissors for the opening coin toss, obviously. That's something Nick Sirianni has insisted on that he's going to do with every coach. And what I'm really looking forward to from this game is kind of like, what will the Falcons offense be like now? Because we've been used to, in fantasy now for over a decade, Matt Ryan being like a 40 attempts a game player. And will Arthur Smith, you know, kind of try to build and evolve that with Matt Ryan, keep like the, you know, like the high, I don't know what, that's not like their high tempo, but like high volume passing attack Matt Ryan's used to, or will he immediately try to implement more of what they did with the Titans, which, you know, he's not going to be trying to limit Matt Ryan to 25 attempts, but is Matt Ryan going to be more around like 28 to 32 than like the 38 to 42 he often is? I guess a lot of that will have to do with the Falcons defense is any good, which it rarely is, but that's like the early season storyline I'm going to be following the most with the Falcons. It's just, how much will Matt Ryan be throwing as much as we've been to, again, for over a decade, used to him throwing?
His best fantasy seasons, talking about Matt Ryan, have been when his attempts are down a little bit and he's been more efficient. He's not a guy who has gone through the roof with way more attempts. It's a little bit like Matt Stafford in like early Matt Stafford in Detroit, where when his attempts went through the roof, it was inefficiency like we've never seen. So that might be a good thing, honestly, for Matt Ryan's fantasy value. I have no faith that the Eagles can put together anything close to a non-disastrous season.
Or if they even want to.
This season. Yeah. I mean, you're right. You're right. But I also think this Sirianni guy is going to, at some point, this season, he's going to bench Jalen Hurts for Joe Flacco. And it's just a matter of time. No. I really believe that.
Sirianni is just the millennial knee biter, by the way. He's like the a different philosophy, I'm sure, but big gamble energy when it comes to just like overall football sophistication.
He's going to say, you know, we had to teach Jalen a lesson. And the fact that we were up 3 and we lost by 14 doesn't matter. You know, Jalen got the lesson.
One quick tidbit on the Falcons, and you can take this for fantasy betting, whatever you want to do. Remember it for best ball leagues or just cry like Matt's probably going to do. But they actually have an extra road game since it's 17 games. So they have 9 road games to begin with. But they traveled to London for a home game. So they actually have 10 road games, that being week 5, and then I have an early bye in week 6. So the first 5 games make out swell. Even the London game is against the Jets. That's great for fantasy. But then they return in week 7 with 7 road games the rest of the way. It is a disaster second half for them.
Yeah. It's good. After they had like the hardest schedule in the league last year, that's a nice thing.
Not that anyone's keeping track on this podcast, but
congrats, Matt.
Thanks. Yeah, good season. 6-11.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters. Both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Want to remind you that our premium product subscriptions at NBC Sports Edge cover all sports, so you can get access to NBA, NHL, and MLB premium products under the same umbrella for 10% off any subscription. Enter the promo code GOOD10. Okay, 8 down, 8 to go. Given all of the offseason buzz around the Chargers and the fact that the Washington football team actually did some seemingly smart things on offense, bringing in Ryan Fitzpatrick, adding Curtis Samuel, I was a little surprised to see a relatively low total on this game, 44.5, I think. What stands out to you about this matchup, Pat?
I mean, to me, that actually doesn't surprise me. We have the football team, which vaulted from 27th in total defense by both points and yards in 2019, to top 5 in both last season. Ron Rivera kind of coming in and stabilizing the ship, but of course taking huge advantage of a generational type player on defense and Chase Young, and just like immediately doing what he was hired to do with that defense, versus now like, you know, one of maybe the brightest defensive mind in the league last year with Brandon Staley, the new coach of the Chargers, and two teams that could be, this could be like a big like feeling out period for both teams, like what their early season identities are going to be. Because the Chargers are going to be a much different Chargers team than we're used to. You'd have to be assuming. I think it's going to be a much smarter, more disciplined team, and that they could kind of be a little more buttoned up, reined in at the beginning of the season. And just then going a West Coast team, even if it's week one, trekking out to the East Coast to face an elite defense, what I'm assuming will be 1 p.m. Eastern. I could see this being a very low-key game for someone and Justin Herbert, who, you know, people are going to be expecting to take that next step to like to true superstardom this year. I think it could be a slow start to the season.
If the Chargers want to win this game, they're going to get to the East Coast 6 weeks before week one. They're going to have the training camp. They're going to have preseason, everything over there to get their body clocks adjusted, because West Coast team traveling for an early start against what should be a really good Washington defense. It could be really bad. I don't know how the Chargers are favored here. It is mind-boggling.
It is surprising.
That jumped out more than anything, more than any line that I saw this morning, was that Washington is a home dog to a West Coast team. I don't get it. Anyway, hammer Washington, in my opinion.
Even in adding Jameen Davis with their first-round pick, off-ball linebackers really aren't part of the equation in today's NFL, but it was the perfect complement to a ferocious punt front seven that was already stacked with first-round pass rushers. So I think it's going to be a fun X's and O's football game that – does not answer in fantasy so much, but genuinely, like, it should be back and forth if this Chargers era is actually a new one. And if it isn't, then it's going to be a one score game and they're going to miss a field goal in the last 3 seconds.
Yeah, I think if you're drafting Chargers, I would you know, lower my expectations for week one production.
Except for Larry Roundtree. Look it up, folks.
That's happening.
The Seahawks at the Colts has one of the highest totals of the week at 52. Colts brought in Carson Wentz and did very little to upgrade the offense around him. Meanwhile, the Seahawks are in run it back mode, possibly literally run it back mode, because Pete Carroll has already said he regrets not running it more last season. I'm sorry, but that's Pete Carroll's fault. Are you looking forward to this one in any way, shape, or form, Denny?
No. I am low-key stunned that the Seahawks are underdogs here.
I am too. Not, I'm high-key stunned.
I completely agree. Yeah.
I don't get it. You know, what exactly? I mean, I guess the Seahawks were so bad at the end of last year that maybe that colored the week one, you know, line, but I certainly don't get it. It's going to be in a dome. Well, I mean, I guess they could open the roof. We have to keep our eye on the roof. For fantasy
and a retractable roof at Lucas Oil. All right.
Yeah, and it's horrible when it's open. By the way, it casts shadows everywhere. It's a terrible idea. Keep it closed. Anyway,
does it have the same like the sun death ray that they have in Dallas? Yes. That's a lawsuit waiting to happen. By the way,
yeah, sun death ray. Yeah. So you know, and Russell Wilson has been very good in domes over his career. So I don't get the line. Fantasy wise, I guess it's whatever. On the Colts side, it depends if Carson Wentz is anything close to what it used to be, you know. But on the Seahawks side, it's not a particularly daunting matchup for that offense.
The sun death ray is actually called Sky Mirror from Jerry Jones, by the way. Like that's the looming evil villain that everyone has across at halftime.
Sky Mirror is more dystopian than sun death ray.
That's the looming villain whenever teams have to play after 5 p.m. because the sun shines down on the field. No, it's going to be fun considering it is an indoor game. And we've talked about this in the past, just how the Seahawks, although they maybe do just hammer into the ground with Chris Carson to establish this new offense with a new OC. But again, all of their top five wide receivers run under a 4.5 40. So now against the Colts defense, where the secondary and pass rush is the weaknesses on every part of the unit, both sides of the ball, then it could be interesting. I just feel like we're going to be let down with a lot of Chris Carson.
Picture Jerry Jones being like, activate Sky Mirror.
Is that, are you serious? That's the name of it?
I believe that's what he refers to it as.
Yeah, that is quite dystopian.
Yeah, there is a thing called Sky Mirror.
Am I misremembering that? Did the Dallas leave a hole in its new stadium, just like their old one?
It's not a hole. They put the windows on the side of the sunset. Thus, every afternoon game, and as we know, Cowboys play a lot of primetime.
Yeah.
The sun obviously is in the way, and it gets in the quarterback's eyes in the second and fourth quarter.
Yeah, it's a
disaster.
Dumbest
also,
thing.
Also, the Titantron, I forgot what they call it, Megatron, something like that. It hangs down too low.
It's got to be more dystopian than that.
That's why punters hit it sometimes, especially in the preseason. They'll just knock it because it's so low.
They're trying to do it in the preseason, right. You know.
Right. It's ridiculous. It's just the Cowboys.
I hate that stadium.
Yeah.
Jerry World, folks.
Number six on our list, the A.J. Brown target rampage and Chase Edmonds sizzin' daigle officially get underway on the same field as the Titans take on the Cardinals. I haven't even mentioned the Ferk daddy yet, Anthony Ferkser. Over under of 51 in this game. Daigle, what's your excitement level on this matchup?
It is a good one, and it almost sets up like you would think they would hammer Derrick Henry, but if the Cardinals put in on the gas, because recall – Kyler Murray was basically dependent on rushing until he blew out his shoulder, injured it against the Seahawks, and then basically couldn't run over the last six games of the season. And so, like, if he's back to full health, which we fully expect, and the Titans defense is as bad as we think they are, because they have gone about team building the absolute wrong way this offseason, then it will be a very fun shootout with the arrival of A.J. Brown truly from week one on.
I'm kind of feeling the under in this game. I don't quite know why. I think Mike Vrabel, even though John referenced the Titans' curious team building, I think Mike Vrabel is a good enough defensive mind where there's no way their defense could be as bad as it was last year. This is a total gut type opinion. And I worry about too. I mean, I know we have continuity for the Titans offense, but also the first game without Arthur Smith. And it was a lot of it was because Kyler Murray was injured, as John referenced. But I lost, if I had any faith in Cliff Kingsbury? I almost said Cliff Kicksbury, as he's known on Twitter. If I had any faith in him, it was fully a lost in the second half of last season. And I could see the game maybe being kind of a down low S show for you Zoomers out there. I won't say the word.
They're too young. They're too young.
But yeah, they're too young. But I this was a game where I looked at it, like, I felt like I didn't know what to expect from this game.
You're stacking Kyler with Rondale Moore and DeAndre Hopkins, and you're running it back with Firkser and AJ Brown, and you're done. Bing, bang, boom. We're done. We're done with DFS for week one. We'll join us for week two. I mean, 51 over under. I don't listen to Pat on this one. This is going to be.
I truly don't actually.
This is going to be. You know, the Zoomers. Here's what the Zoomers are calling it. They're calling it a barn burner. And I believe that.
No, that's like the silent. That's the greatest generation. I think that was a World War II thing. Like burning barns. Yeah, that is not a Zoomer reference.
I'm sorry to advocate violence against barns, by the way. I didn't mean anything.
Matchup of two teams that combined for a 25-7 record last year as the Bills host the Steelers. It seems like we have been consensus down on the Steelers offense given Roethlisberger's arm limitations. Then again, they return all their top receivers. And even if taking a first-round running back was maybe stupid, there's no doubt Najee Harris should be an upgrade there. So is it possible, Pat, we're slightly too low on the Steelers' potential in this game and in the early part of the season?
I just feel like any hope for, like, true regeneration for the Steelers' offense, like, rests on regeneration of Ben Roethlisberger's elbow ligaments. And that just doesn't happen at this age. And I just have a hard time seeing how the Steelers offense is going to look different. I mean, having an effective running game when they had no running game would certainly help and would open things up for the passing attack a little bit. But I mean, defenses are going to be able to camp out on Ben Roethlisberger until he proves something has changed with his arm. And that just doesn't happen at that age for an athlete. So the Steelers offense, I have a very hard time knowing what to expect. Cause like, this is about as impressive of a skill core as you could have. I just don't know how Ben Roethlisberger's elbow is up to the task this year, basically.
I could not agree more. And also Najee Harris, it could go absolutely, and this is another term that I never use, but I'm going to use here, could go ham in the early season because don't look it up. Don't look it up, folks. And don't tell your kids, but because the team is so invested in Najee Harris and wants to run so badly that he's going to get every opportunity. He's going to get a ton of touches, probably regardless of game script, unless it gets really wildly out of control. But even in that scenario, he's a good pass catcher. You know, he's going to be getting, you know, those cheap PPR targets and points. So I think he's a guy who could and should get off to a really good start to the season.
I believe his player prop at PointsBet, Denny, is 900.5 too. And that seems incredibly low, not only because he's going to get every touch, but also because, like, I think the Steelers are exposed this year. Even the defense returning isn't anything that really scares you like last year. That's probably why they got a primetime schedule. But again, Ben Roethlisberger's arm, and then, of course, they're just taking a third-round center and stuffing him in there because they don't have another choice after drafting Najee Harris in the first round. And then they're going to be without last year's two starting cornerbacks, Mike Hilton, Steven Nelson, and 32-year-old Joe Hayden playing on the final year of his contract. So I think the Bills pants the Steelers in week one like they did in week 14 last year, I believe, when they were up 23-7 midway through the third quarter. And then, it's just sort of the downfall of that organization until they find a way to move on from Roethlisberger.
And let's get into some pure, like, boomer sports writer narrative energy here. Okay. Where, like, the Bills fans, after not being in that stadium until the very end of the year last year, the place is going to be sold out. Like, it's going to be like a championship celebration, even though it was a team that lost in the AFC championship game, and it is going to be a raucous, intimidating environment. And absolutely. I'm now writing weekly columns for the Boston Globe.
You're saying the Bills fans are going to win this
they
week.
Are.
My column.
That is the expect.
And everyone who has been touting Zach Moss is going to lead the Bills backfield. They see he handles four or five backfield touches. Good job. Right. Applaud to you.
Circling back to Ben's elbow for 1 second, what if we put it directly into the piercing ray of the light from Skymir? Is there a chance there that that could regenerate the elbow somehow?
It's worth a try.
It is
rookie of the year type energy. Look it up. 1993 film, a masterwork. Maybe something like that will happen with Ben Roethlisberger's elbow.
You said it needs regeneration. Have we tried Regenetron or whatever that stuff is called?
Regeneron, the COVID medicine for his elbow. Have we tried the horse acne medicine? Just rub it on there.
That's a great call.
We have to try.
Just wheel him out in a wheelbarrow. Lay him on the ground of AT&T Stadium at 5:30 p.m. if it's not daylight savings time, and let the ray hit his arm and let's see what happens.
That's what I'm saying, Daigle. I'm with you.
I'm not a doctor, but I think it could work. Go ahead, sorry.
Four to go. We all agree that the Raiders offseason made very little sense, but I think I'll still be strangely excited to watch their week one matchup against Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, Monday Night Football. Total of 51 in this one. For starters, for me, this is the first opportunity for me to lose ground to Daigle in our J.K. Dobbins, Clyde Edwards-Helaire season-long bet. It's also National Sammy Watkins Day. He has gone off week one each of the last two seasons while fully healthy, done almost nothing after that. This is a fact. Sammy Watkins has 5 touchdowns the last two seasons. 4 of them came in week one. Denny, your thoughts. Denny, your column.
My column is this. It's going to be a bloodbath. I think the Ravens are going to absolutely wreck the Raiders. I don't care that it's in the new stadium. I know, you know, Pat's going to say, "Oh, it's in the Raiders stadium. They're going to be
Vegas faithful." This connection to this team that they've had for decades.
There is no such thing as a Vegas Raiders fan. I'm all about the Ravens defense just humiliating the Raiders, and then Lamar Jackson having yet another, and he's another week one blow up dude. I think he has another one here easily.
I will say what you will about John Gruden. He's usually fairly schemed up early in the season. And they've had a lot of these primetime games, you know, and most of them are closer than you would expect. And I can't believe I'm saying this about John Gruden, but like, it does really help the Raiders and John Gruden. This is like their first game, and he'll be able to game plan for this for a month. And I think the game will probably be closer than we expect. But with the Ravens, you just still can't believe in the Raiders' defensive talent. It's like, what was the plan? Why was the Raiders' offseason priority to remake one of the best offensive lines in the NFL? I truly do not understand what was going on.
Well, that's another thing. Baltimore boosted its offensive line. So, like, you know, that was a glaring weakness. And the Raiders were, I think, bottom of the league or bottom two in the league in sack rate last year. So Lamar Jackson is going to just be able to sit back there and pick him apart or run or whatever he wants to do.
John Gruden may show up schemed, but John Harbaugh has historically been schemed even more. Baltimore's 10-3 in season openers under him. As Sharp Football's Rich Rebar notes, their past 5 week one games have actually been won by a combined score of 177 to 26.
Wow.
And then at the end of this game, when they lose by 4 scores, Gruden's going to look up at the crowd, shrug, and be like, "We don't play the Ravens every week." And then it's going to hit them that the Raiders actually drew the league's hardest schedule. It doesn't get any easier after this. And then fantasy owners are going to look up and see, oh, Josh Jacobs wasn't involved in the second half because it's Kenyon Drake time, because there's never going to be a competitive game script. Like, this Raiders season is shaping up already, hypothetically, through the spoiler cast, to be an absolute disaster.
I'm not kidding, John. You just actually depressed me. Yeah. Everything you said was true. And like, that was bleak and depressing. And I forgot about the Harbaugh narrative, by the way. That's also a very true narrative for week one.
You heard it on the spoiler cast. Raiders 2-15 in 2021.
Maybe, honestly.
Yeah.
4-13.
3 games to go. The Packers and the Saints is the one that I believe, one game I believe that apparently doesn't have a line yet, right, guys? And we believe this is because Aaron Rodgers' status being in limbo. Is it as simple as that?
So it does not have a line at points bet yet. I've kind of searched around for others, and I've seen that some books have it at Packers +2.5, in which I say, even if Aaron Rodgers is traded, does that make sense? Because the Saints are sort of sneaking into the season as highly overrated, given 5 primetime games, although the salary cap, and I'm team salary cap doesn't matter, but the salary cap ripped them apart. They are so thin off the bench at every single position, don't have quarterback figured out just yet. Michael Thomas, if he just runs slants, who knows even his fit with Jameis Winston if he wins the job. So that seems like a very bad line, which is also why PointsBet has just refused to lay it yet.
Yeah, I've seen a few places too, the Saints 2.5 point favorites, but John hit on the most critical point. We're all focusing on like the Aaron Rodgers factor, where we don't know for sure who the Saints quarterback is going to be. It'll probably be Jameis Winston. No, you know, it's going to be Ian Book. It's not going to be Taysom Hill or Jameis Winston. It's going to be Ian Book. It'll probably be Jameis Winston, but we just don't know yet. And as John said, depth used to be the Saints thing. So maybe this is bad for the Packers that it's week one, and the Saints will presumably be near full strength. But the Saints, after years of being one of the deepest teams in the league, as John said, are no longer close to that because of the salary cap finally kind of mattered. They still got to hand out a fake $140 million contract, where I'm still not sure how that's like not a Ponzi scheme and leading to the loss of a draft pick. But it is finally catching up with the Saints.
I desperately want Taysom Hill to be the starting quarterback for the Saints. This game would be way more, I think, fantasy intriguing if that were the case. I think every Saints game would be better for fantasy, including if you're able to get, you know, Michael Thomas in best ball leagues is regularly going in the third round in 12 team leagues. And this is all due to the fact that he had a fluke ankle injury in week one last year and missed a bunch of time and then punched a teammate, whatever, you know, I mean, just a bunch of stuff that is probably not going to happen again. I think he holds more value with Taysom Hill under center than he does with Jameis Winston. And this game and all going forward.
Never forget that he punched the same cornerback, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, who Javon Wims also punched. Still one of the best storylines of the 2020 season.
Someone else punched him too. Wasn't there a playoff punching also?
Yes.
Maybe the Bears just punched him again in the playoffs.
Yeah, he is, I have to say, I don't condone punching. That guy's incredibly annoying. I mean, I don't know. He should get a flag literally every play.
Your own teammate is getting suspended for punching you in practice, you might be annoying.
He's irritating.
Pat, the return of Pat's, you might be a redneck structure. Good to see. you might
be annoying if Michael Thomas is breaking your jaw.
A lot of Courtland Finnegan and Chauncey Gardner-Johnson.
All right, number two on the list. We've got the Cowboys presumably getting back a fully healthy Dak Prescott with his full complement of weapons at Tampa Bay to take on, you know, the defending Super Bowl champs. I'm kind of getting sick of saying it. This is the game that kicks off the season, though, on Thursday night at NBC. Feels like one that could have a ton of fireworks, Pat.
It does. At first blush, 6.5 points felt a little hefty to me for the Bucs, but then I remembered Dan Quinn is now the Cowboys' defensive coordinator. As a team, the Bucs scored 75 points again in two games last season. And the Falcons' defense, not a ton of talent, but the same thing is very much true of this Cowboys' defense. And I think the Bucs will cover. I am expecting the fantasy fireworks, of course. I don't know. It could be a tough road to hoe, though, for the Cowboys. We're coming back off the devastating leg injury against one of the league's best defenses in the Bucs. I think this will have the feel of like a party coronation for the Bucs. And hopefully, I don't know, John, what is your what is your opinion on this game? Should we be wary of the Cowboys with the injury factor versus this elite defense, or is it kind of all systems go for DFS?
In my opinion, this is the moment, especially in an island game with the world watching, when everyone who takes my and our advice throughout the offseason panics immediately, because you should be stacking the Cowboys everywhere, every player down, especially Ezekiel Elliott, who's going like in the first, second round turn, even though he's going to get every single touch as he did last year when healthy. But this is a nightmare matchup. And then the Cowboys followed up at the Chargers in week two. So two tough games, but then if you look from week three on, nothing to be worried about. So much so that like I'm even worried about some Washington futures I sprinkled on, because I do believe they're the better team, but the Cowboys schedule is so easy this year. So no matter what happens, or perhaps you miss out on Cowboys in your draft, you start trading for them in week two and week three, because maybe some owners will be down on them, even though the schedule just opens up to the world.
The thought of this game for single game DFS, purposes, makes me sweaty. I mean, I actually start perspiring under my arms. I'm sorry if that's too much information.
That's the gasoline. That's the gas.
That's the cup of noodles, by the way.
Oh, it's the combo of the gas and the noodles. Yeah.
All right. I lost my train of thought. So yeah, I mean,
he ingested so much gas that he's just
he's trying to sweat it
this
out.
This is pouring out of him.
Let's go to the next game.
Sorry, Dave.
you're going to have to make some really, really tough choices here, because there are so many potentially explosive playmakers on both sides of the ball. You're going to have to, you know, commit. I can't believe I'm talking about single game DFS right now in May, but you're going to have to commit to a certain game script in order to capitalize here. But it should be the Cowboys' formula. Last year was to be a disaster defensively, to force their offense into a high-paced, pass-heavy approach. And who says that doesn't continue into week one this year?
Talking about a single game DFS strategy in May, that's the beauty of the spoiler cast. Yeah. That's what it's all about. Right.
Now you don't need anything for week one DFS. Yeah.
It's just the beauty of being truly sick human beings, too. Well, that's fine.
All right. Number one, last one out of 16 week one matchups, is a game that currently has the highest total of week one, 52.5 points. The Browns at the Chiefs in a rematch of that memorable game in the divisional round, the Chad Henne game, as it will forever be known, fellas. The Chiefs are presumably going to come out pretty angry in this one, looking to pile up a ton of points. Denny, what do you think?
Craig?
I think that I actually do think that I'm prepared to get more Patrick Mahomes exposure in best ball than any other quarterback this year, because I think that he is teed up for a monster year. He's been a little bit unlucky with touchdown rate and some injuries the last couple of years. And this matchup is not particularly intimidating. You know, last year he left the game, I believe, in the third quarter against Cleveland in their playoff matchup. And he had like 260 yards and two touchdowns, I believe, at that point, and some rushing yardage. So I don't see any reason to fade this game. I'm not overthinking this game. I'm not going to galaxy brain this game. Let's get some exposure to this one.
Hey, before you jump in, Pat, Denny, when you said teed up for a monster season, you meant testosterone up, right? Just to be clear.
That's right. That's what I meant. So we're talking about, but a high T game is like a 12 to 10 game.
We weren't going to talk about this on the show, but Denny, I'll just explain the Denny gas thing, and it'll effort to get his testosterone levels up. You know, especially too, there's a gas shortage, kind of a dangerous thing, being wasteful. It got his adrenaline going. He's going to waste some gas. He's going to just pour gas all over his body to try to get the T levels up. And we don't know if it worked yet. He is wearing a t-shirt for the show, so it might have worked a little bit.
It is true.
A David Bowie t-shirt, though, so that's kind of low T.
It's a mix, right? I'm just trying to counter it. I'm wearing a relatively tight t-shirt, but it is David Bowie.
One of the most popular, like, early schedule narratives I saw was kind of people all over the Browns. Did anyone else catch wind of this?
I did.
It's kind of just strange to me. The Browns are a good team. They're a very well-coached team. They're now a pretty balanced team. But the Chiefs, like, again, it's like everyone thinks back to this game and they remember the Chad Henne moment, but it's like they forget that that meant that Patrick Mahomes wasn't playing for, like, large chunks of the most important game of the season to that point. And the game is not fully representative of what Chiefs versus Browns is actually like. And we're so down on the Chiefs after a very bad Super Bowl. But in order to look terrible in the Super Bowl, you have to make the Super Bowl. And so the Chiefs are still a colossus to me. I will say they've had kind of good injury luck, where Tyreek Hill has missed a little time. He was a little banged up, especially down the stretch in 2019 after injuring his hamstring in Mexico. He didn't look quite the same. But they've had relatively good injury luck. If that, like, changes this year, like Travis Kelce or Tyreek Hill ends up missing like 5 or 6, 7 games, then you do get a little concerned about the Chiefs, where, as we know, like, it's just totally up for grabs in the number two receiver spot. And if they lose one of those alphas, suddenly there are kind of like real problems for this offense, even with Patrick Mahomes. But if Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce stay reasonably healthy, I mean, the show is going to roll on for the Chiefs.
Guys, that's the end of our 16-game breakdown. Anything to mention on the website before we get out of here?
Yeah, I have a piece going up later today on the cheapest, most high upside best ball stacks that you could possibly ever want in life.
That's nice. I'm actually truly looking forward to that.
Thank you.
And I still have my Dynasty rookie rankings out there. We're now in full swing of Dynasty rookie draft season, so check out the ranks on the site.
All right, this has been your week one spoiler cast. All of this will prove to be 100% accurate, but please don't listen to this again on the Thursday before the start of the season.
Please don't.
Ingest the knowledge now, but then please put it aside. That's the safest way to do it.
We're deleting it.
Daigle, Pat Denny. Thanks, fellas. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next week.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.